Hello, I'm David Whetstone, and you're listening to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Welcome to WPFW 89.3 FM, WPFWFM.org. You're listening in this hour to We the People. I'm your host, David Whetstone, and here on your Jazz and Justice radio station. Our topic for today is Growing Up Black in America, One Family's History, One Family's Legacy. In his memoir and debut book, The White Peril, Omo Moses shares his own life story along with the excerpts from his great-grandfather's sermons and the writings of his father, civil rights activist Bob Moses. It is an account that spans three generations of an African-American family, all fiercely calling and working for justice. Omo Moses is an activist, an educator, and a media maker. He is the founder and CEO of Math Talk, an education technology company that creates products to inspire adults and kids everywhere, particularly those in economically distressed communities, to enjoy math. He is the former executive director and founding member of the Young People's Project, a national nonprofit organization with programs in over 10 cities in the United States that utilize math to prepare students to succeed in school and in life. Welcome, Mr. Moses. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I understand that your family has been dedicated to education and that it's the empowerment for the agency of not only individuals, but for the betterment of many Black communities throughout our nation. Thank you for that work.
Thank you.
And I also understand that you're going to be here tomorrow at Bus Boys and Poets at 14th and V Street Northwest at 6 p.m. talking about your new memoir, again, The White Peril.
Absolutely. I feel honored to be able to be in conversation with Courtland Cox and other members of the SNCC community.
All right. And Mr. Cox is a well-known activist in the Washington, D.C. area, and it's an honor that we're in a city that has so many SNCC veterans, again, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Tell us about, to start off with, your own organization, Math Talk.
Yeah. Well, Math Talk really grows out of the work of the Algebra Project. And the way I like to describe it is that math has been the family business. And so at an early age, you know, my dad impressed upon us the importance of learning math. And, you know, I would have preferred to be outside hanging out, but he made sure that we spent extra time working with him so that not only were we good at math, but he felt that it was important for us to help others become good at math. And so he made that connection between young people learning math and young people being able to have opportunities in society. And so the Young People's Project, I mean, excuse me, Math Talk really extends out of that work. And so the first organization that I checked, and that was with young people in Mississippi. And my dad was really challenging us to think about what we as young people could do to ensure that not only we individually got a quality education, but that we help, you know, the young people coming behind us get a quality education. And so YPP, as I like to call it, is invested in training and employing high school and college students to teach math to younger children. And it's been a each one teach one kind of focus. And so I ran that for a while. And then I have two kids, Johari, who's 12, Kamara, who's 10. And so when they were born, I was particularly interested in my relationship with them as a dad and how I could support their learning, and in particular, learning mathematics. And so as the Algebra Project demonstrates, you know, math is all around us. And one of the best ways to interact with it and access it is through our own common experiences, through our own language. And so my son and my daughter and I, you know, we would do math while we were making breakfast. We'd do math while we were riding the trains. We'd do math while we were at the playground. And so just felt like there were all these opportunities to engage with them in learning, doing things that we enjoyed, that we loved. And so Math Talk really grows out of that. It really looks at how we can tap into young people's just natural curiosity and desire to learn. And if adults really help to facilitate that, then young people see themselves as math people, and they see math as just instrumental in who they are and part of their everyday lives and part of their everyday experiences. And they expect to be good at it, you know?
And of course, please do tell us about your father, Bob Moses. I imagine many of the WPFW listeners know of his work with Freedom Summer and SNCC. But for those of our listeners who might not know who Bob Moses is, please give us a brief portrait of your father.
Yeah. And so my dad was really a remarkable parent. You know, we could always tell that there was a lot on his mind and he was somewhat of a mystery, but he was always present. And so whenever we needed him, he was there. And so I actually begin the book with my favorite story of my dad. When I was, you know, traveling overseas, and I realized when I was at the airport that I didn't have my passport, and my dad did whatever he could to make sure that I got that passport and was able to have that experience. And so I think it just typifies, you know, who he was for us as kids. And, you know, I think beyond that, he was just a remarkable organizer that really cared about people, that was deeply invested in democracy and trying to push and nudge America forward in a way that it lived up to this ideal of we the people. And so he wanted us to see ourselves as we the people and us to understand what that meant and the rights and responsibilities that this country afforded and how we can step in and play a role in, you know, really making this country work, not only for a select number of people, but for all people.
Well, this was also the conviction of your great-grandfather, William Henry Moses, as well, an activist Baptist minister. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Yeah, you know, as I was saying before, my dad was somewhat of a mystery, and so his mom passed before we were born, and then his father passed while we were in Tanzania when we were kids. And so, you know, I remember going to Mississippi and working with the Algebra Project, and Mr. Frank Figures, who was a parent of the Algebra Project, approaching me in the hallway and handing me this book. And he was saying, he said, Mr. Moses, is W.H. Moses some kin to you? And he handed me this book called The White Peril. And at that time, it was close to 90 years old. And I said, I think so. And it was really a life-changing moment, because at that moment, my dad, you know, he went from being this person that we didn't know much about to being this figure that, you know, arrived within the context of so many others. And so, you know, as I began to read about my great-grandfather's work, it just had a transformational experience. Not only did I begin to see the connection between his consciousness and his movement and his activism and my dad's consciousness and activism, but it also helped me understand how the movement really rose and fell and rose and fell across generations, and how there have been so many people, you know, some people that people are familiar with, others who you'll never know about, who have contributed to what led to the civil rights movement that my dad and other folks participated in.
And it's a matter of place, community, and beyond family, the extension of family with friends and neighbors. So at what one point early in your life, your father and your mother decided that maybe it'd be best to raise their present family in Tanzania. What was the experience like? What impressions did it leave you with?
Yeah, I mean, we just grew up in Tanzania, and so it was like, it was a remarkable thing to be in a place that's just filled with nature. You're part of a natural environment, and you know, just being able to experience that was really quite remarkable. And it just became a reference point for who I was. And you know, as I began remembering and writing this book, part of writing this book was really remembering what it was like being born in Tanzania. What were those memories? And who was I, you know, before I arrived in America and became Black when I arrived in America? And so, you know, most of my memories are really just about, you know, being in a space where nature and the natural world dominated that space, and feeling alienated from that space and uprooted as we arrived in America. And I think in many ways, that's the typical kind of immigrant experience, or the experience of folks leaving home and coming to America. And what I remember about America was just so much concrete and how cold it was. And my sister and I would sit on the kitchen floor and look out the window and refuse to go outside. But then as we began exploring and experiencing America, there were other things that we became conscientious of. And, you know, I think part of the book is trying to make sense of those things as it relates to, you know, colored folks.
And you mentioned the whole thing about relating to nature and the environment, which was nurtured in such a healthy way by both your mother and your father. But it was also shared with your younger brother, Taba. And your family settled in Cambridge, Massachusetts, but tell us about where in particular you grew up and the things you did with your brother.
Yeah. So my brother, I love him to death. He was my first companion and comrade, and you know, we just go outside and ride our bikes and just get into stuff. And so Cambridge is one of those cities where if you're a young person, you know, parents felt safe letting you just kind of go out and roam. And so, you know, the minute we got a bike, it felt like the city was ours, and you know, we'd go on endless adventures. And so
through the woods along the Charles River.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah. And so one of my favorite chapters in the book is called The Wild, and it's about my brother and I riding into the woods on the other side of the Charles River and what we encountered. And I tried to juxtapose the wild on the Charles River with the Blodgett swimming pool, which was on the other side of the Charles River, which is where my parents sent us to become swimmers. And there was this tension, you know, you want to kind of let your kids roam and be free and establish a sense of independence, but you also want to prepare them to be able to navigate society. And so I see the swimming pool and the Brunel's Gators as a way for our parents to really prepare us both mind, body, and spirit to confront whatever we were going to experience in America, and to be able to kind of come out of that as a whole person. And so that chapter really centers on that. And just thinking about, you know, how we as young people, as we're out in the world, encounter these different narratives, encounter these different expectations and perceptions of us. And you know, what are some ways in which we can prepare ourselves, prepare young people to overcome those challenges, and, you know, for their spirit and their personhood to remain intact?
Some of those challenges come from, excuse the expression, the established order or institutions. Mm-hmm. And so you honor your father's and mother's efforts, particularly the educational efforts, in whatever setting you all were in. And what I found unique about your story, and it's not that they didn't do the same thing that I'm about to mention, but you understood that you had to meet students not only in the school setting, but outside of it.